Just Vasamsi, clothing, dodo, gave in charity, haran, necklace, mahamana, one who has a broader outlook. Translation, wherever the king visited, he continuously heard the glories of his great forefathers, who were all devotees of the Lord, and also of the glorious acts of Lord Krishna. He also heard how he himself had been protected by the Lord from the powerful heat of the weapon of Aswatthama. People also mentioned the great affection between the descendants of Vrishni and Prita, due to the latter's great devotion to Lord Keshava. The king, being very pleased with the singers of such glories, opened his eyes in great satisfaction. Out of magnanimity, he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing. Purport, kings and great personalities of the state are presented with welcome addresses. And this is a system from time immemorial. And Maharaj Parikshit, since he was one of the well-known emperors of the world, was also presented with addresses of welcome in all parts of the world as he visited those places. The subject matter of those welcome addresses was Krishna. Krishna means Krishna and his eternal devotees, as the king means the king and his confidential associates. Krishna and his unalloyed devotees cannot be separated, and therefore glorifying the devotee means glorifying the Lord and vice versa. Maharaj Parikshit would not have been glad to hear about the glories of his forefathers like Maharaj Yudhisthira and Arjuna had they not been connected with the acts of Lord Krishna. The Lord descends specifically to deliver his devotees, Paritranaya Sadhunam. The devotees are glorified by the presence of the Lord because they cannot live for a moment without the presence of the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is present for the devotee by his acts and glories, and therefore Maharaj Parikshit felt the presence of the Lord when he was glorified by his acts, especially when he was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother. The devotees of the Lord are never in danger, but in the material world, which is full of dangers at every step, the devotees are apparently placed into dangerous positions. And when they are saved by the Lord is glorified. Lord Krishna would not have been glorified as the speaker of Bhagavad Gita had his devotees like the Pandavas not being entangled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. All such acts of the Lord were mentioned in the addresses of welcome, and Maharaj Parikshit in full satisfaction rewarded those who presented such addresses. The difference between the presentation of welcome addresses today and in those days is that formerly the welcome addresses were presented to a person like Maharaj Parikshit. The welcome addresses were full of facts and figures, and those who presented such addresses were sufficiently rewarded, whereas in the present days the welcome addresses are presented not always with factual statements, but to please the postholder, and often they are full of flattering lies. And rarely are those who present such addresses rewarded by the poor receiver. Translation, whenever the king visited, he continued to serve the glories of his great forefathers, who were all devotees of the Lord, and also the glorious acts of Lord Krishna. He also heard how he himself had been protected by the Lord from the powerful heat of the weapon of Aswatthama. People also mentioned the great affection between the descendants of Vrishni and Prita due to the latter's great devotion to Lord Keshava. The king, being very pleased with the singers of such glories, opened his eyes in great satisfaction. Out of magnanimity, he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing. Here we see the spontaneous adoration or worship of King Parikshit by the people of various places, troop probably had never met him before. They had heard of him, but when he went to these different places, they had never seen him. But they had all heard about his wonderful activities. And they had also heard about the activities of the Pandavas and the activities of Krishna. So all of these were glorified. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, the main glorification was in relation to Krishna. And of course, the Pandavas and Parikshit were related to Krishna. So Parikshit would be pleased not if he is glorified, but if Krishna is glorified. So that's exactly what these people did. Nevertheless, they were also in admiration of Parikshit himself. They mentioned this event where Parikshit was saved from Aswatthama's weapon by the Lord personally. So this indicates the great compassion the Lord has on his devotees. So Krishna personally protected Parikshit in the womb. And thus, Parikshit can be considered a very great devotee of the Lord. Of course, the Lord helps all devotees. So we have devotees in the material world who are doing sadhana. The Lord helps them. And the Lord even helps people who aren't devotees. So we have the case of Achamil. He was not a devotee, but because he chanted the name of the Lord sent his Vishnudutas and he protected him. So the Lord is responsive to all sorts of people, even if they're not devotees, even if they accidentally do some devotional act for the Lord. So what to speak if the devotee is serving the Lord sincerely? He may not be on the highest level, but we see that nevertheless, the Lord interacts with the devotees who are doing sadhana bhakti. And then if the Lord does that, then what to speak of how the Lord interacts with those who have prema? He must respond to them in an even greater way. So we see an example of the Lord interacting with a devotee who is on a lower level, not even doing pure bhakti. That is the case of Gajendra. He was chanting prayers, not out of pure bhakti, but to get saved from the crocodile. And what happened? The Lord came and killed the crocodile and saved him. So even for those doing mixed bhakti, the Lord will respond. What to speak of a person doing sadhana who's practicing pure bhakti? Then definitely he will respond to that person. So in this way, we should never think that the Lord is unresponsive to any of the devotees, and even the accidental devotees, he's very responsive. And ultimately, of course, he is most responsive to a person in prema. And therefore, one of the qualities of prema, which is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, is that it controls Krishna, Krishna Karshani. Prema controls Krishna. Of course, we say all bhakti controls Krishna because he responds to all the devotees, but he responds most to that in the devotee in prema bhakti. And thus he will do things for them that he does not usually do. For instance, he was the charioteer for Arjuna. So he put himself in a lesser role as a chariot driver, which is a sudra occupation. For his friend Arjuna, who was a devotee. So in other words, he served as devotee there. And we have many other instances of how the Lord serves as devotee. Of course, this happens not only with Krishna but even with Vishnu. So we see in the story of Ambarish that Durvasa actually insulted Ambarish. So then the Sudarshan Chakra began chasing Durvasa throughout the universe, and finally he went all the way up to Vishnu, And he asked for help from Vishnu, please don't let the Sudarshan Chakra burn me up. And Vishnu says, oh, I can do nothing because it's my devotee. He's in control of my Sudarshan Chakra. You have to go and beg forgiveness from my devotee, and then he will very nicely withdraw the Sudarshan Chakra. So this shows that the Lord serves the devotee, and he gave his Sudarshan Chakra to Ambarish for his protection. So therefore, it is said in that in relation to that story that the Lord is in his devotee and the devotee is in the Lord, and therefore the Lord never separates from his devotee. So in this way, Vishnu was intimately serving Ambarish. So that's exactly what Durvasa did. He went back and apologized to Ambarish, and then the Sudarshan Chakra stopped pursuing him and stopped burning him. So, of course, Krishna is even more responsive and more merciful than all the other forms of the Lord, including Narasimha and Ramchandra. Krishna's got the most remarkable nature in relation to his devotees. So, of course, all forms of the Lord are controlled by the prema of their devotee, but Krishna's controlled even more by that prema. So therefore we find extraordinary examples of how Krishna is controlled. And the prime example is Damodar. Krishna agrees to get tied up by Mother Yasoda, which we usually don't see. The Lord usually displays his powers. But here, with Mother Yasoda, Krishna shows his lack of power, and he's willing to get tied up by Mother Yasoda. The Mother Yasoda could control him by her love. So other forms of the Lord will not want to get tied up. Ramchandra will not get tied up by anybody. Vishnu will not get tied up by anybody. But Krishna gets tied up by his devotee, Mother Yasoda. So we find remarkable forms of how Krishna comes under control of his devotees, more so than any other form of the Lord. So, therefore, this form of Krishna is recommended for worship because he's most responsive to the devotees, and he helps them in all cases. So, he helps the devotees in prema in this extraordinary ways, in this extraordinary way. But again, even for those doing sadhana, the Lord will help. And even if they're not doing sadhana, even if it's accidental, he will also help in extraordinary ways. So, Ajamil, he got the help of the Vishnu Dutas because he chanted the name of Narayana. So, very great effect. What if somebody chants the name of Krishna instead? What happens? He must get greater effect. Much greater effect, because Krishna's more responsive. So that is why it says that the name of Krishna is three times as more powerful than the name of Rama, which is 1,000 times more powerful than the name of Vishnu. Extraordinary powers, 3,000 times the power of the name of Vishnu. So therefore the name of Krishna, even accidentally, is going to great effect. And if we chant the name of the Lord with devotion, even in sadhana bhakti, very, very great effect. And in prema, then ultimate effect. So, of course, with Krishna, that is shown by the gopis in the Ras Lila. Krishna disappeared. Of course, first he disappeared with Radha, and then all the gopis were looking, and then they found two sets of footprints in the forest, and then they saw Krishna's footprints and Radha's footprints, and there was an argument among the gopis. Oh, this gopi is a big cheater. She's run off with Krishna. That was Chandravali's group. And then the others who were Radha's group. This is very, very fortunate that Krishna's alone with one gopi, Radha. And then they saw Radha also there. The Krishna had disappeared, and Radha was left there on the ground, fainting. So then they all began together to search for Krishna. And they couldn't find him. They went deeper in the forest, and the forest got thicker and denser, and then the light of the moon didn't show through, and they couldn't go through that forest. It was so dark and dense. So they didn't know what to do. Well, they were longing for Krishna. So then they went out of the forest, and they went down to the bank of the Jamuna River, where it was the light, where the moonlight was shining very nicely. And what did they do? They didn't know what to do. So they did kirtan. They chanted Krishna's name. And what happened? Krishna appeared. So the kirtan of Krishna's name was so powerful that Krishna suddenly appeared. He could not help but come and manifest himself to all the gopis after he had disappeared and caused them such problems. Huh? So for the highest devotees then, chanting the name of Krishna, very, very powerful also, and it brings him. Huh? So, and of course in the story of Gopakumar, Narada Muni advised Gopakumar that when he was searching for Krishna in the upper planetary systems, and then he went higher and higher, then he went to Vaikuntha, still he wasn't satisfied because he wanted to see Krishna. So Narada Muni says, instead of chanting your mantra, that's your diksha mantra, we should chant Krishna's name, Harinam. Then you'll get to see Krishna. So he began doing that, and then he got to Goloka. The very, very powerful, the name of the Lord in accidentally, in sadhana, or in prema. Very, very powerful, even though it's very, very simple. So in this way, Krishna responds to his devotees in the most remarkable ways, and does things for them. So with Parikshit, this incident is very famous. He saved him in the womb. When Aswatthama's weapon was coming for him, Krishna saved him. Later on, we see that Parikshit was a very great devotee of Krishna. Even as a child, he would worship Krishna with great attachment. And he was always looking for Krishna. And that's how he got his name, Parikshit. Iksha means to see. Pari means everywhere. He's looking everywhere. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Because he had seen him when he had appeared and rescued him in the womb. Yeah? And so he was always attached to Krishna. And Krishna was very attached to him from before his birth, where he saved him, and after his birth, etc. So everything was arranged by the Supreme Lord in a very wonderful way to protect his devotee. So the Lord is responsive to his devotees at all times and helps them in all circumstances. So of course, Parikshit, a very special devotee. But, as I said, Krishna is even there for those who are doing sadhana bhakti. Yeah? So it's mentioned in the stage of Anarjuna Vritti in the Bhagavatam, first canto here, that Krishna from within purifies the devotee and destroys his anartas. So you rise from the lower gunas and get up to sattva guna and then surpass sattva guna, etc. So Krishna is there in the heart and he's purifying, destroying all the anartas for the individual. So the Supreme Lord takes great interest in his devotees. That is why the process of bhakti is considered more powerful and more effective and quicker than any other process, because we get the direct participation of the Lord, Bhagavan, in relationship with the devotee. So the Lord helps the devotee progress in devotion, and that in prema, then he becomes the servant of the devotee. Therefore, Krishna can be glorified at all times in most remarkable ways. So we see here how all the crowds of people from the various varshas were glorifying Krishna because of his supreme compassion on everyone, all of his wonderful attractive qualities. In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami mentions 64 qualities, but this, of course, isn't all of his qualities. So we have many statements in the Bhagavan to say that the Lord's qualities are unlimited, and therefore Shesha Nag, with all of his thousands of hoods and his thousands of mouths, can go on glorifying forever, but he can never come to an end of the glorification of the Lord, because the Lord is manifesting all the time newer and newer pastimes with his devotees, which show his wonderful qualities. And though it looks like the qualities are fixed, actually, the qualities are always increasing and becoming more and more attractive. And the qualities of Krishna become increasingly attractive. The pastimes of Krishna become more and more attractive. So there's never any staticity or immobility in the nature of Krishna. He's always increasing in his wonderful qualities, his wonderful activities, and how he relates with his devotees. And therefore the devotees are very pleased with him and satisfied with their relationship with Krishna. So these people, they were glorifying Krishna. Many of them probably hadn't even seen him. Most of them probably didn't see him, hadn't seen him at all. But by glorifying him, then they actually can experience the bliss of Krishna. This again is kirtan. So it becomes non-different from the Supreme Lord. And by glorifying the Lord, then they can actually experience Krishna also. So in this way, the people got this opportunity by seeing Parikshit to glorify Krishna and, of course, glorify his devotees. That is the Pandavas and Parikshit Maharaj, and this was greatly satisfying to them, and it was satisfying to Parikshit Maharaj, because anything related to the Lord was any glorification of the Lord was a cause of joy for him. So therefore he's very, very satisfied. So it says here that he opened his eyes in great satisfaction. So happiness is one of the signs of happiness, is that the eyes open very wide. So that's why it mentions the eyes. So he's very, very happy. So his eyes went very, very wide, opened very nicely. Yeah. So the king was pleased with this glorification of Krishna. They were, of course, glorifying the king. King is also a devotee of the Lord. So for the people, this was a cause of satisfaction to glorify the devotee of the Lord. In the nectar devotion, we have bhakti is Krishna Anusilanam, to cultivate a relationship with Krishna. Then the commentary says, well, not just Krishna, all the forms of Krishna. So we have Ramchandra and Nishamadev and Vishnu and Varaha. So you can have bhakti for any of these forms of the Lord. And then it mentions also the devotees. We cultivate relationship with the devotees also. Very good. And later on, Rupa Goswami mentions that bhakti means all these angas of bhakti, like hearing, chanting, remembering, chanting verses, bowing down, are in relation to Krishna, but they can also be done in relation to the devotees, and it's also bhakti. Yeah? So therefore we can glorify not only the Lord, but glorify the devotees. It's also part of bhakti, part of devotional service. So very, very powerful means also. And therefore we have the people glorifying the Krishna and the devotees of Krishna, and in this way becoming very, very satisfied. So we know that Krishna is never separated from his devotees. Sometimes you say, okay, the Supreme Lord is independent, and then the scriptures say, in the beginning only the Lord existed, only I existed, and then I created everything. So then we think, oh, there's the Supreme Lord all there by himself, and there's nothing there, it's all black everywhere. But that's not the case. The Lord is eternally in the spiritual world with his spiritual Dhamma and the spiritual devotees, and there's always pastimes there with his devotees. So what it means, I am alone, it means there's no material, nothing in the material world was there, that's all it means. It doesn't mean there was nothing except the one Supreme Lord. The Lord was there with all of his devotees in the spiritual world. Yeah? So the basic characteristic of the Lord is bliss, ananda. And the only way that bliss is expressed is by rasa. And rasa is expressed by not one person, but two persons, a devotee and the Lord. So therefore, if the Lord is full of ananda eternally, there must always be devotees in the spiritual world. And the rasa is expressed through pastimes, because devotees eternally in the spiritual world. This is what gives rise to the bliss. This is the nature of the Supreme Lord. So, if the devotees glorify the Lord, then necessarily they have to relate that to a glorification of the devotees. The two things must go together. So, therefore, the process of bhakti means glorifying the Lord and glorifying his devotees. Which is very interesting, because we also have in Hare Krishna the Lord and his devotee. So Hare is for Hara, Hara is Radha, Radha is the greatest devotee. So we get not only glorification of Krishna, we have glorification of Radha. And what do they have? They have rasa. They have relationship. They have Madhurya rasa, which creates the bliss. So we're glorifying not only Krishna, but the devotee of Krishna in Hare Krishna mantra. So right within that mantra, we have the highest principle, glorification of the Lord and his devotees. So necessarily, it's very, very satisfying when the devotees can do this, because through that they can realize Krishna and his devotees, or Krishna and Radharani. Okay, any question now?
But generally, we would understand that the average person can't access those other bhashas. But obviously, the king and the army, etc.
Special powers, I guess, to get over those huge mountain ranges or whatever. However they got over them, I don't know how they did it, but managed to surpass the mountain ranges and get into the next varsha.
Whether it was a different situation back then, that there was some access, but I mean, not normally, like we hear about Mount Meru on the marshes, but what was people getting there, we can't detect their presence at all.
Yeah. Possibly there is some further detailed description in the Mahabharata or some other work. I'm not familiar with it, but possibly they had some other means of getting through the mountain ranges or something. Who knows? Of course, they could also use vehicles, flying vehicles, to get over the mountains, perhaps.
Mahabharata mentions Bhima. He was trying to access a higher marsh or something, and there was guards there stopping him. They said, "We know you're very powerful, but just understand that you're not meant to access here." So they gave him gifts and sent him back. Anyway, obviously at this point, unless you're highly qualified, then Prabhupada mentioned that flying a plane, he was able to see Mount Meru, but didn't really give much detail, but he had some vision to be out there.
It's interesting that I actually came up yesterday. I got a mail from Ormila, actually, and she was observing the Delhi Bhagavatam. That's the first canto that came out, and then 1972 they put out a official BBT edition like that. And then there was the note on these particular verses, Bhadrasva, Ketumala, and Harivarsha, and all these things, that particular verse, and what Prabhupada had originally written was, and this one is like the Mediterranean countries over here, and this is like Darjeeling up here, and this is Tibet over here, like this. So he was identifying places on earth, other side of the Himalayas, with this. So we get Kimpurusha Varsha was like Tibet, and like this, and then probably Bhadrasa was the Mediterranean countries, European countries on that side, and then other side will have the Far East countries, etc. So That was somehow edited out in this present edition we got here. So he was also using like what Sariputta had mentioned, that one was the local, very local positions on our Earth planet in relation to somewhere in the central, up in the Himalayas is Mount Meru.
Why is not Prabhupada usually said that?
Well, probably it'll come back in the next edition. nobody was aware. Suddenly she pointed that out, and I said, oh, wow, this is interesting. So maybe it'll go back in the next edition.
Because that was kind of
what I was mentioning. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would suspect that actually that information would come from the Bhagavatam put up by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur originally, because that was one of the Bhagavatams that Prabhupada used, and all of these notes here are actually from that, not from the commentaries of the Acharyas. It's from the Gaudiya Mutt edition of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Probably he mentioned those things, those particular places in his thing, but I'll have to check with that.
There's going to be a next edition then.
Yeah, they're coming out with a new edition of the Bhagavatam, so working on it. Well, there's the Atmarama, blissful in himself. Atmarama means self-bliss. So that's when you realize I am Atma, I'm not the body. And then we don't have to associate with material pains and pleasures. So we get peace from that. That's the Atmarama, bliss from the self. Nobody else. That's the impersonalist liberation, so to speak.
That's what I was going to ask, actually. Because the nature of the soul is ananda, so we're naturally blissful. But
yeah.
Self and Krishna are kind of, in constant relationships, so that's where that ananda comes from, rather than just being...
So we can't get the natural or the nitya dharma, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in the Jiva Dharma, the nitya dharma of the jiva, which is prema. You can't get that unless you recognize the Supreme Lord and develop the relationship. If you only understand that I'm separate from the body, then you get Brahman realization. But that's not the nitya dharma of the jiva, that's not prema. So we have to recognize the Lord, do sadhana bhakti, then we get the prema. Otherwise we end up in that position of just, liberation, which is a negative bliss in the sense of no more material life, no more sickness, no old age, no death. So the positive side means we have to recognize Lord and develop a relationship with Him. So the capacity is there in the jiva, but it won't manifest unless we start the process of bhakti.
It says a number of places in the Gita, first thing is self-satisfied. So I suppose that's
the Amarama type thing, one stage. So the scriptures actually, why do they even start talking about, self-realization at all? Why don't we just do bhakti? So apparently it goes in stages. This is the gradual process. We do karma yoga, then we do jnana yoga, then we do bhakti yoga. So a preliminary to bhakti is to understand we're not the body and, we're the soul, at least understand something of that. But if we only stop there, then we end up with jnana and impersonal liberation. So we have to go beyond realizing we're not the body, we're the soul, and realize there is Supreme Lord also.
When we think of the God on the inside, do we refer to that as the Paramatma, or do we see Krishna on the inside?
Well, for most people in the material world, God is there as Paramatma. He's the neutral witness. And He supplies all your karmas. He makes sure all your karmas are going on and all your desires are satisfied within your karmas, and all the devatas are acting according to your karmas so that you get your happiness and of this lifetime plus your distresses, etc. So that's Paramatma. But when we do bhakti, then the Lord starts interacting with the devotee. So this, and then we say that's Bhagavan interacting with the devotee in prema. And when we're into sadhana bhakti, sorry.
Yeah.
That's the gradual process. So the yogis can do that. So that's why it's superior to jnana. Because in yoga, at least you recognize a form of the Lord, whereas in Ghana they don't recognize a form of the Lord. It's no form. But in yoga they realize a form of the Lord, so that's the plus point of yoga, Ashtanga yoga. But then the problem with that is usually they get influenced by the Ghanis and they want to merge into the Paramahamsa. And then again they end up in impersonal.
Because it's helpful for me, like remembering that God exists within all things and God within myself and all living entities.
Yeah.
Sort of recognizing that Paramahamsa, but then doing Bhakti alongside that, that will kind of eventually then reveal the personal form through the constant remembrance of the Paramahamsa as well.
Well, we can do both. Of course, we prefer the Bhagavan because that's also the Uttamadhikari. The Uttamadhikari sees the Lord everywhere. But it's not Paramatma, actually. He's seen Bhagavan in everything. Everything is under the will of Bhagavan, and he's in everything, and he's doing everything. So the prema means that they see Krishna everywhere. So it's a more ecstatic version of what the Paramatma yogi would see. Because we Bhagavan means we have a relationship with him.
When you said that the Maharaj Bhakti was looking always for Krishna, were you looking for Paramatma or for Krishna? Because in the description it said that when the dwarf was no?
He had his his chakra and his disc, I think, club with him, but actually Krishna also shows four arms in Dwarka. So he also is like this, and who was trying to imitate him? Pundraka was trying to imitate his four arms in Dwarka. He put two extra arms on and said, "I am also Supreme Lord," like this. So he looks like kind of like Vishnu in Dwarka also.
He also described the size of his thumb. So
oh, okay. Yeah, well, of course, he can expand or contract anything. The Supreme Lord, either Bhagavan or Paramatma, can expand or contract.
And he was looking for
Okay. Hare Krishna.